I am unashamed. What about you?
So, Dad, you were telling us an interesting story about the goings on at your house.
Life in the woods,
in the woods with Phil, in the house with Phil.
Well, we're used to dealing with dead animals to some extent or the other, harvesting ducks, squirrels, deer, whatever. But this was a case of Miss Kay coming there. Oh, no, you're not going to believe what's happened. I said, what happened? She said, back in the bathroom, the ceiling is solid flies. I said, what? Wait,
blow flies?
The day before, nothing on the ceiling. Every once in a blue moon, we keep a fly swatter in case we see a fly. We'll track him down and get him.
Oh, yeah.
But this was, the roof is covered. So I get up. I said, these women. I said, she's, you know, romancing the story. So I go back there and I walk in, open the bathroom door, and I look up. There was a sequence of events.
Were the flies
two,
there?
Two nights earlier.
Were the flies there, like she said?
The flies were there, covered the ceiling.
So like I'm a horror movie.
I'm looking at them, and I'm thinking, how did they get in here?
Yeah.
There were none in the bedroom that's adjacent to the bathroom there. There's a wall. There's my bed where I'm sleeping. There's a wall within,
because you know,
four feet. Well, two nights before she saw the flies on the ceiling, I'd say 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard a bumping sound. It was kind of a bumping sound. And then it would be like a scraping sound and a slight moan. I thought, so I wake up, it wakes me up.
You hear this?
And it's black dark in the bedroom. So
it's not Miss Kay.
I reach up and turn the light on, and I'm looking at that wall. I said, I thought maybe it's on the other side of the wall in the bathroom. And I said, no, it's not on the other side of the wall. Well, I had stuff like a couple of boxes there, these battery-operated drills. Red back in there, somebody, you know, did some work. That was there, and some hunting clothes. So I began to separate all the, because it sounded like it was in there with me. Well, I'm going through all this stuff that's parked there. I had weapons parked there. You know, you come in my bedroom at 2 o'clock in the morning, bad mood. If you didn't. Hey, Phil, it's me. I'm one of your sons. You identify yourself, because you come walking up in there at 2 o'clock in the morning. Bad move on your part, because I got a cachet of weapons.
Weaponry.
So I look at the wall, and I hear this sound, and it goes on and on. It would be a little interval. It'd stop, and then it'd start again. I said,
what was it? Scratch, moan, and
this was
bump.
2 days before the flies were seen. So I'm just giving you the sequence of events.
I'm starting to put,
so
put
I'm
it all
looking
together.
At the wall, and I'm hearing something that sounds like it's either in the wall or on the other side of it. Well, the other side is the bathroom. So I get up, walk around into the bathroom, and I look around. I hear the same sound. I said, something is, some kind of varmint is inside this wall. I said, huh, well, that went on for 2 nights. Well, on the third day, we got flies on
let
the ceiling.
Let it ride.
So I began to try to put it together. I said, no, I didn't go outside and crawl up under the house.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Because I got three dogs there. I said, well, the dogs can go up in there and let me see maybe what's up in there. So on about the third day of this event, the flies show up. Well, I started out with a fly swatter, but I found that there were too many flies with a fly swatter. So I go in there, and somebody gave me one of these little salt field. You put salt in it. That's your
assault rifle.
That's your assault rifle, literally, and you cock it. And it blows out a scatter shot with salt, and I was having a better aim with that. Yeah. I was reducing the flies more quickly with the cock it and take it off safety, boom, and I'm scatter shooting with salt. Well, they're raining down on the floor. Miss Kay, she's scooping them up, throwing them in the commode and flushing them. So for one whole day, we fought the flies. You'd kill 50, and you go back in there in about an hour. Well, there's 25 more. And so I finally said, how are they getting in this bathroom?
So you're waging war, but you're not winning.
I'm not winning. So I look up and I say, okay. I began to study every opening whereby they could have come in. There's the air conditioned.
Your house is 100 years old.
Well, so there's an air conditioned vent. I said, but they couldn't get in that vent. I said, unless there's a hole in the vent, which I don't think so. I said, so they didn't come out of that. And I said, well, let's see. The lavatory was right next to, it's a little bit of barrier there. Then the lavatory is right next to the commode. So I'm looking at the lavatory. I said, well, come up through the pipe. I said, that's they can't do that. This thing runs out there and goes into the septic tank.
What about however the critter got in?
Well, so I quit hearing the moaning and the scratching. Well, that all stopped after day two. Whatever it was is now silent. What I didn't know during that silent period for a day or two is when the flies showed up. I said, let me see if I can put this together. I think something was in the wall. I don't know what kind of vermin it was, but it died.
Yep.
Now the flies have blown it, laid eggs on it. There's probably maggots up under this house and whatever they killed. And I said, the flies are coming off the maggots. I said, but there's got to be an entry point. So I sat down for about 30 minutes like I'm hunting deer or something, and I'm looking, and I noticed that the pipe that gives the commode fresh water, the pipe that goes all the way out there to the city water. We got city water that far down. I look at that little coating on that pipe, and it had a little flange on it, and I saw a fly come out behind that flange, and there was a crack in it. I said, I now see how they're coming in here. So I took tape, taped up around that little flange where it hits the wall. Mm-hmm. I taped all that up where they could not get through there. Well, I noticed when I killed the next 30 flies, the recruits didn't show up. So I thought, all right, I found the source of how they're getting in here, and everything in the bathroom died. I killed everything.
You're now winning the war on the fly.
You cut off the
reinforcement. So a day goes by, and then we were sitting there, Dan, the eunuch,
we're
and myself.
4 days in now.
And when they looked up, Dan looks up, and Bobo runs by, jumps up in my chair, and he's kind of perched there. Well, I've lost my smell as of a couple of years ago, way before COVID. So get off that. I didn't get COVID, but I can't smell you if you had rolled in something dead. So the dog is sitting there, and Dan says, that dog smells like something dead. I said, get out of here. So I got him off me, opened the doors. The other two dogs, sneaky and freaky, I ran them all out. I got them out there. I said, get the Dawn liquid. So Dan brought the Dawn liquid, and we went outside, captured Bobo, and he had the Dawn liquid in one hand. I had the water hose in the other. I said, dude, you have been visiting the wrong place. He had come out from that house, and he had rolled in something dead. I'm putting all this together. That's what was in the wall. He died. The flies came. I killed the flies. The dog has gone out and rolled in something dead. Now we've got dogs that smell like dead flesh. And I said, now we got to wash all the dogs up. I said, bar the front door so they can't get in. They got a flap. I said, close the flap off. Dogs are no longer allowed in the house. Well, when Miss Kay got that news, oh, you don't want to hurt them because they want to come in. I said, hey, honey. I said, somebody got to stay outside, and if they're going to roll in something dead, they can't come in the house. Listen, there's about 4 or 5 days there of the biggest mess I ever got into on the plague of the flies. Now, whatever it was, you say, well, why didn't you get on your hands and knees and just crawl back in there under the house? Let me explain something to our audience. We have killed timber rattlesnakes 5 feet long that have come out from under that house. You just don't go willy-nilly. So I said, it's bad enough. Something has died. The flies blew it. I've been fighting them. But I was not going to get up in there and run into something that in a five-foot rattlesnake or whatever, all the diseases that come off something dead. So I stayed out from under the house. I said, no, I'm not going to get up
under
there.
I think it was a Mr. Possum in the bathroom with a lead pipe.
Whatever kind of vermin it was, I know one thing. He died. The flies blew him. They got in the house. I've killed all the flies.
The dogs
have gone and wallowed into the dead, whatever it was. Well, they have gone through extreme cleansing.
Well, that's biblical. Where there's a dead carcass, there the vultures
will gather.
Well, I now declare...
So you city dwellers who never had to fool with this, but I guarantee you.
Your house sounds like a house of horrors. I mean, it's snakes underneath it, blowflies in the bathroom. It's like a demon-possessed movie.
I'm just giving you about a three-day period, 4 days,
but
five,
maybe. But you can't smell was the best thing.
That's the best thing that had ever happened to me. I couldn't smell them. Dan could. He said, good night, them dogs. Well, the women got home and... Although they could smell them, they said, well, that's not as bad as Dan said. And I said, well, y'all get out there and clean them. So I cleaned Bobo up, me and Dan, for visiting me too early after he got in the dead thing. But Miss Kay and her sister are the ones that they got the other two.
Dawn liquid in the hands of Dan. So, Dad, we declare you the Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
Now that you have conquered the flies, which I've never heard of having to get bigger weaponry to take on flies. Have you? This is like something biblical.
Well, I came in late to the party. I thought you guys were in the book of Exodus or something, talking about the plagues. I didn't know what was going on.
Oh, we were in the book of Exodus. There's no doubt about it.
No doubt.
That's the craziest story I've heard in a while. That was insane. That was pretty good, Dad.
The things that happen when you're on planet Earth, you never know.
So, Dad, I wanted to mention the other day I was wearing, you did Jesus. I don't know, Zach, you were on here or not, but it was Jesus as Superman, which was pretty good. And I had my gospel T-shirt on, and I mentioned that
the guys at
316 Tees did the shirt with the gospel symbols, and they're giving all the proceeds from the sale of this shirt to One Kingdom.
So everyone will know.
So tell them what the symbols mean.
So everyone will know.
This is our mentor, Bill Smith, came up with these symbols to just visualize the gospel story.
When I was 28, I'm now 75. So how far back is that?
50.
Almost 50 years.
All right, 50 years ago, Bill Smith drew this out on a piece of paper, an arrow coming down out of heaven, that first one. That's God becoming flesh.
If you're listening, these are symbols on a T-shirt.
We covered that in the book of Matthew. Gabriel told Mary, you're going to have a child. By the way, your kinfolks over there, Elizabeth, she's 6 months pregnant right now. And because Mary was saying, what in the world? How's it work? I'm a virgin. So we went through that. Well, that's when God became flesh, and it's an arrow that's coming down out of heaven. Here comes Jesus. He died on the cross for the sins of the world, which we covered in Matthew. He's fixing to really get into it. We are in Matthew 16. He's going to tell them, look, I'm going to die, be buried, and raised from the dead. Well, what Jesus is going to tell them, it's now a T-shirt. There's a tomb where they buried Jesus after his death, the cross. There's an arrow coming out of the tomb, the resurrection of the dead, by which it tells all of humanity, if there's ever a way to get out of here, that's the only way we found, ever. We've looked at everything. I've read all the world's religions. You say, anybody come up with a story like this? No. So there's a final era, the return, when he'll bring all the saved, their souls and spirits. He'll bring them with him. There'll be a resurrection of the dead. They'll be reunited with a glorified body and live forever. Smith wrote this down on a piece of paper because I was saying, gospel, what is that? Gospel music on the radio?
You didn't even know what it was.
I didn't know what it was. Well, he drew it out with those arrows there. And I said, how in the world did I ever miss that? This is when I was 28. I thought, I missed that story somewhere between, when I was a boy and right now. I said, I now get it. I said, let me check this out to make sure you're not lying to me, because this sounds too good to be true.
Yeah.
He said, it probably is too good for us, but it is true.
It is. Let's take a break, Dan. So, Zach, did you know that even an okay credit score can cost you $100,000 over the life of a 30-year loan. Did you know that?
Oh, I knew it. I did know that.
I knew you would, because you've bought a lot of homes. You move around a lot.
I bought a lot of homes. I watch my credit score.
Yeah, you're always watching it. So this is why you should use one of our sponsors called ScoreMaster before you apply for any loan. ScoreMaster can take your credit score from okay to great. And the good news is they do it fast. The average user adds 61 points in 20 days or less. And Lisa and I have used it, and I think we bumped up over 70, which was really good. Even if you just add 61 points to your score, you save thousands of dollars on a home loan. So go to ScoreMaster.com, and you want to add points to your credit score quickly. You can maintain and protect your credit score with 24/7 credit monitoring and a $1 million fraud insurance. It only takes minutes to enroll. So see your points go up when you go to ScoreMaster.com/Phil. That's ScoreMaster.com/Phil to get started today. So we've been using those symbols all these years since.
And 50 years later.
And Smith is gone. But we appreciate those guys. It was 316 Tees if you want to buy one. And everything goes towards One Kingdom Day, which was this past Sunday. What I love about it is, you know, people are curious about it. So, like, at the Southern Lair, I had to put in some extra concrete on my driveway. And so we had some people staying there. And they said, hey, you want us to draw the gospel symbols in the driveway in that concrete? And I said, yeah, that's a great idea. So Beverly did that. And when I got back down there, my neighbor came over. He said, hey, what's your hieroglyphics there? That's the way he put it.
Yeah.
In your driveway. I said, I'm glad you asked. Yeah. And then I went through the gospel, you know, and so I've done that now with three of my neighbors, which is really interesting because it's a curiosity. It's like, what is that? Because you're not sure, you know.
You know, I got it on my front porch on the slab when they poured the concrete slab.
Right.
I told little boy, the concrete man, I said, I want you to draw me some little hieroglyphics here. And I showed him that, and he put it there. There have been people that says, what's in marks out there?
That's right.
I told them, and they were like, whoa. Yeah. Some of them like, ooh, I better get out of here, you know.
That's why when people ask me if they can get a tattoo, because, you know, some people, because in Leviticus or whatever, that was tattoos were taboo.
I just read that, Leviticus 18, don't do that. Law of Moses.
Under the law of Moses.
Said, but don't
I
do
say, so here's what I say. I say, yeah, get one. And then I say, do this. It was the gospel symbol.
Yeah.
I was like,
I've seen a few with them.
We have.
Well, because I think when
I think Owens put them on his.
Yeah, we have three of our elders at White's Ferry Road that have those. Steve Adams got them too, and somebody else.
I think when people ask what it is, it's a good conversation.
It is. And, you know, you think about it, you know, symbols have been around since the first century, really. Like the fish symbol is still around. That was kind of a, I don't know, Zach, do you know when that started? But that was very old. The idea of the fish was kind of the way of being able to say that you were a believer to one another. It was kind of a secret, you know, that was a way that they communicated.
Between the fishermen and the first meal that Jesus ordered was fish. Fish played kind of a role.
Yeah, and you still see it. Like on Dallas Jenkins, on The Chosen, they have that whole fish thing at the beginning. And also, of course, the cross itself, which I've always thought was kind of ironic because so many people wear it. But, it, you know, the cross is outside of Jesus, is just a very cruel, it'd be like wearing an electric chair around your neck. I mean, it's like it was a terrible way to, you know, execute people, but it's in and of itself, it means nothing.
A brutal death that saved the world.
Right. And yet now it's sort of the symbol of Christianity.
Well, the way he died, even though it was rough, it was who died was the more.
Right.
Who was going through that? I mean, he's innocent. Son of God.
By the way, these markers on the T-shirt, when we're coming up on Matthew 16, from that time on, Jesus asked him who they said he was, and Peter said, well, some say you're this one, that one, the other. He said, what about you, Peter? He said, you're the Son of God. And Jesus said, I'll tell you the truth there, Peter, that you're Peter, on this rock I'll build my church. First time church is mentioned in the book of Matthew, and the gates of hell will not overcome it. I will give you, Jesus talking to Peter, the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And so it's all laid out from that time on. Jesus began to explain Matthew 16, 21, the prelude is over. Now the point of it all is announced. You must go up to Jerusalem, suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and leaders of the law, teachers of the law, that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. And old Peter went to holler and said, no way that's ever going to happen. And Jesus called one of his disciples, get behind me, Satan. You don't understand the things of God. That is what the entire Bible is built on.
That's exactly right.
And the turning point, the prelude to it all is about the kingdom, how you should behave, what's going on here. But the strength of it is just fixing to be announced. And you wouldn't think people would say, And this is repeated throughout Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, so no one can miss it.
Right.
It's said by four different people, the same events. You say, why would keep repeating yourself? So you can't miss it.
So a lot of you out there in Unashamed Nation have asked us about that. And I mentioned this a few podcasts back, but I want to mention it now since we're talking about it. We have a book that C Plus Ministries is our 501c3 that we started with Ben and Melissa and Mom and Dad. And everything that goes into this is going to go towards helping people understand the gospel. So we've made these little books available for you. It's called the C Plus Gospel Series. And you can go to cplusministries.org if you want to buy some. Somebody sent me a picture, Dad, of one of our listeners. They bought a whole box of these. And I think he was a firefighter, but I'm not sure. But he was going to give these out to people he knew. And I was like, he gets it. That's the whole idea. Yep. Is we want not only do we understand what the gospel means to us, but this is the life-saving opportunity for everybody else. And so that's the point of this podcast, and that's ultimately the point of why we're here. I mean, yep. Save people yep. who
and we're sort people. Of tongue-in-cheek with the C Plus Gospel Series to tell our listeners, look, it's not rocket science.
You don't have to be an A+.
You don't have to know. You don't have to be a brain to figure this out.
Right.
It's simple.
Yeah.
Brutal and profound, but it is simple.
Well, I would say, wouldn't you say that's been sort of part of the whole core of what we've been studying Matthew is that this is for the masses. This is for everybody to know. Not just the hierarchy of
Jew
leadership.
Or Gentile.
Jew or Gentile. It's for people who just put their trust in Jesus instead of know the law inside and out and all that, you know. So
I did a little study because I just noticed in Matthew 11 and 19, where we were last podcast,
yep.
that Jesus said he referred himself as the Son of Man. He said the Son of Man mm-hmm. came eating and drinking. So I was just curious. So I did this for you last night to get your thoughts. I looked up every place in Matthew where he referred to himself as the Son of Man. So you got in 8:20, that's when he referred himself as homeless, when he said, the guy said, I'll follow you wherever you go. And he said, I don't have a place to lay. The Son of Man doesn't have right. a place to lay his head. In 9:6, he said, this one was, there's only six of them, but they're really interesting. He said, but so that you may know, this is the guy that was let down through the roof, yep. that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. He said, get up, take your mat, and walk. So he was a healer, the Son of Man, but he also had the power to forgive sins.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're adding these up, you got he's homeless, he's a healer, he forgives sins. He came eating and drinking, which gave him a bad reputation. And so then Matthew 16:13, when you read that earlier, Phil, I thought about that because he's asked Peter, who do you say the Son of Man is?
Yep.
And he's like, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God, which there you get who Jesus is. He's the Son of Man, and he's the Son of God.
Correct.
So I looked it up just to see. There's about 102 references where he referenced himself as the Son of God, and there's like 70 where he referenced
that should be enough so that you couldn't miss it.
Yeah, it's going both ways.
The Son of Man, yeah, the Son of Man reference is out of Daniel, and if you read, it's a reference back to this messianic prophecy in Daniel, and you read it, and it's not the picture of of the lamb petting Jesus. It's a picture of like sovereignty and power, and I mean, it's kind of a scary picture that he paints, you know. But it is interesting that how he refers to himself as Son of God and Son of Man. I think what he's getting at there, he's saying, I'm the guy, you know, the guy in the Old Testament that Daniel prophesied about? That's me. I'm that guy.
Well, always.
I'm the fulfillment.
Well, that, you know, the last reference, I'm going to skip this one because you brought that up. In Matthew 24:30, he says it many times, and it's this, he's coming in judgment.
Yeah, that's the whole judgment picture.
Yeah, but he was referring himself to Son of Man, which I think is what Zach's referring to. The one I skipped.
Hang on, Jess, let's take a break. So we got a lot of guns being bought and sold. Ammo's shortage. You know, people are kind of, last couple of years, everybody's kind of thinking, you know, it may just boil down to having to protect yourself. We've had some pretty interesting things that have happened. So one of the things with the holidays coming on that you might want to think about for a great gift item is from one of our sponsors, iTarget Pro. And it's a dry fire practice that you can do in your own home. And you do it through an app on a phone, which is really interesting. So you're allowed to be able to use, you know, learn this better muscle memory without necessarily having to go to the range. And of course, ammo, who can find it, right? And the prices are really high. So these guys have a really good product. It helps sharpen your target reaction speed, your sight alignment, your trigger function, everything. iTarget Pro comes in all major calibers, including 223 for your AR. So you want to stay sharp and you want to be able to use this app. So go to itargetpro.com right now. You save 10%, plus you get free shipping with the offer code PHIL. That's itargetpro.com, itargetpro.com, offer code PHIL.
The one I skipped was in Matthew 20:28, which where he said the Son of Man came to serve, not to be served, which I think is profound. I mean, when you just put those instances together, okay, he's homeless, but he's also a healer and he's got power of forgive sins. He comes in power and in judgment, but he also came to serve and not to be served. And the foundation of who he is where the church was built.
Yeah.
So I've always viewed it as the Son of Man, Son of God, is that he's the bridge. You know, you use this illustration when you brought up the symbols of the gospel. You know, sin separates us from God. Separates who? Humanity. Well, here came Jesus representing man and God.
Right. That's right.
And so do the math. That was God's way to reunite or reconcile. The Bible uses the word.
I've always thought the same thing, Jace. It's his duality that he is God and he is man. Yeah. And because a lot of people miss that. You know, we didn't get long out of the first century before we had a whole group of people. They were believers, some of them, that came up with this notion that he wasn't really a man. Mm-hmm. You know, they were like, well, he couldn't have been truly flesh. He was almost like he just was, you know, borrowed flesh because flesh is too bad. So they kind of went back to that old Greek thinking. And I think that's why he made such a point about being Son of Man and Son of God.
Well,
that's
an interesting point in the book of Hebrews. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy, check this out, are of the same family. Son of Man, Jesus is saying, I'm part of humanity. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. He says, I'll declare your name to my brothers in the presence of the congregation. I'll sing your praises. And again, I'll put my trust in him. And again, here am I and the children God has given me. Since the children, humanity, have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, Son of Man, so that by his death, with the resurrection that's coming, he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. What a text that goes along with what we're looking at in Matthew. Pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Outstanding. And I think about, Dad, the Philippians 2, You know, Paul said in verse 5, you know, your attitude should be the same as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, so he is God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, human nature. So he's both, which makes him so unique. I mean, that the only way you could ever bridge the gap, as Jace put it, is to have God be a man to then take on sin and die for you. I mean,
Al, let's face it. It is the wildest story ever written. It is a wild story.
Listen to this in Daniel 7, because he ties it directly to this conversation on the kingdom as well. In Daniel 7:13, the Son of Man is presented. It says, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days, and he was presented before him. And to him, speaking of Jesus here, was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is everlasting. It's an everlasting dominion. He will not pass away. And the reference here to the kingdom that we belong to, by the way, his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. So I think it's also the thing about Son of Man is also a reference to how he's reigning in his kingdom and establishing his kingdom. That was part of that prophecy in Daniel 7. So it's even bigger than just his connection with us as humans. It's also saying he came to establish his kingdom, the one that won't be shaken or destroyed. Which
and that was 600 years before Jesus showed up in the book of Matthew that we're reading about. That was 600 years previously when Daniel was talking, which is pretty amazing, Zach. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is.
And what was in the context of even when that was said, think about it, Israel wasn't even a nation. They had been carted off into captivity.
Oh, yeah.
They had not even, so this idea about, you know, what about this physical land of Israel? They didn't, when that promise was made, they didn't even have a country.
That's right.
They were totally, you know, in captivity. You know, Zach, it's interesting because we talked a lot about the Daniel connection to the kingdom. When you wrote the movie Torchbearer, you know, that was at the core, really, of that whole movie, was because then we looked at the nations that rose up after, which out of that context, it saw what happened to every single one of them and said, look, without God, without Jesus, you're going to fail and fall. I mean,
these United States are going to figure this out the hard way.
We're figuring it out right now.
Yep.
The hard way.
We're on the wrong path.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I thought that was interesting. So I guess back to Jace, where you left off in Matthew 11:19, which, by the way, in the context of that one, and we talked about it last week, he was saying, you know, you call me because I enjoy food and wine, you're calling me a glutton and a drunkard. But he referenced that as being, that was the human side of who he was. I mean, you know, his humanity, which is kind of funny because, you know, John came along and he didn't. He was a Nazarite. He took the Nazarite vow, so he didn't have any of that. And yet Jesus is greater because of who he is, which I thought was interesting.
Well, I think it's why it also referred to himself. I mean, I think a key verse in Matthew 10 was when he gave his disciples this authority to go and, you know, and to help in this ministry and kind of set the platform for us. But when he said in 32 and 33, whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven. Whoever disowns me before men, I will disown him before my Father in heaven. Which, I mean, he made a point to say, you know, this is about what I represent and who I am.
Right.
That's why I brought that up. I mean, it's interesting that he referred himself as the Son of Man, but then, because other people, as they study, they're like, well, over here, he's saying he's the Son of God.
Right.
So, but acknowledging who he is, I mean, because he summed up saying there's a God, because that is the big question in the world. Mm-hmm. Is there a God?
Right.
And here you have Jesus. If you come to us and say, well, what's the big deal with Jesus? We would say, yep, he said there's a God, and I'm him.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Apostle Paul said he's the firstborn to the Colossians there. He's the firstborn, first one like over all creation.
Right.
I mean, he's God and man at the same time.
Right.
That's a tough one there.
Right. And we talked about it before about the whole time mind bender thing, because from
I wouldn't mess with him.
From God's perspective outside of time, God always knew what was going to happen and Jesus becoming flesh. So from all of our concept of time, God already knew what was going to happen and that Jesus was going to come. That's why he saw him as the Son of Man, the Son of God. It meant no difference to them.
Yep.
Because they got it.
But I like that phrase where he said, whoever acknowledges me before men.
Yeah.
It's one thing to believe. It's another thing to acknowledge who Jesus is in front of people.
That's a good point.
Because you think about, especially me, I did this on my little man camp venture this past weekend. I was like, what do we talk about as men? Of course, the list was not long because I asked the question, what do we talk about? Football, money, job, women, hunting and fishing. That was basically what we came up with.
Hobbies, right.
Am I leaving anything out?
Hobbies, never that, yeah.
So I said, you just think when you get together and there's men, what do they talk about? That's it. That's what they talk about. So I read this
verse. You're not giving much credence to male this show.
If you disagree, now is your time.
And yet it's true. Let's take another break. So, Dad, you're going to find this hard to believe, but, you know, slow is only right when you're on vacation. You're a sloth, or you're describing QuickBooks, more like slow books. And, you know, when you were running our small business, your way, redneck way of putting it was, if you're waiting on me, you're hung in reverse. So we want to be able to go forward. We want to be able to go fast. And the problem with QuickBooks is it slows you down with all their manual processes, their integration difficulties, and you got all these glitches that go on. So now's the time to make a switch to NetSuite by Oracle, which is the number one financial system because it gives you visibility and control of your financials. It's everything you need to grow, and it's all in one place. So 93% of surveyed businesses increase their visibility. You want to be able to do this and do it quickly. Right now, special financing is back. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financial program only for those who switch today. Head to NetSuite, N-E-T-S-U-I-T-E, NetSuite.com/Phil right now. They got special financing, NetSuite.com/Phil. That's NetSuite.com/Phil, and speed it up.
So I can't argue with what you're saying.
So I read this. I said, when are we going to start talking about Jesus in front of each other? I think it was a pretty good way to start.
Did it get quiet when
it got, you heard a pin drop.
That's right.
I mean, because it, you know, I was using it off that phrase, but I had been studying this.
By the way, Jace,
this podcast.
We discussing Jesus Christ, both God and man. What's the downside to that?
There's no downside, but it does put you in a position of humility. I love what you said, Jason, about acknowledging Jesus before men. More specifically to what you said earlier, what we're acknowledging is that he is divine.
Yeah.
I was just reading Daniel 7 when it talks about the Ancient of Days, which I think
explain
is speaking
that
of the Father.
To people. Explain the Ancient of Days to people who maybe, because they probably wondering what that is.
Yeah, I think he's talking about like God the Father, who is, because it says in Daniel 7 that the Son of Man comes to the Ancient of Days, and the Ancient of Days gives him this dominion, this authority, this kingdom. Speaking of God the Father, when it talks about the Ancient of Days, if you read the description, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's his white woolly hair and the fire in his eyes, and it's almost
it's the father. Yeah, it's the Father. I agree.
But here's what's interesting: if you read Revelation 1, there's a description there that's very similar to how the Ancient of Days is described in Daniel 7. And John on the Isle of Patmos, when he sees this vision, he says, I saw someone like the Son of Man. And I find that interesting that he didn't say someone like the Ancient of Days, because that's the description he gives is the Ancient of Days, the Father, from that Daniel 7. But what he's claiming there is Jesus in his resurrected state, where the Father, remember in John 17, he said, restore to me the glory that I had with you before the world began.
Mm-hmm.
I think the picture of Jesus that we're to see when we hear the Son of Man, it is the incarnation, but it's also like we're talking about God here. We're not talking about like a sub, like we're not talking about a demigod. We're talking about like the creator of the cosmos. Jesus is the creator of the cosmos. He is the third member or second member of the Trinity. And I think that's important because when we diminish Jesus's divinity, Bill Smith, who you mentioned earlier, would say this, that we diminish his sacrifice and it's not sufficient.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we have to elevate our view of this man, this God man that we call Jesus.
Yeah, the sword out of his mouth and that description in Revelation. But everyone needs to remember it's warfare. It's war, but it's spiritual warfare. It's not physical.
Right.
Nations conquering nations. That's not the way the kingdom operates.
But yeah. He did cause some of that confusion by the way he operated as a human, because it doesn't fit most people's narrative, which is why that's the reason The Chosen has been so successful, in my opinion, because I asked him about it. Mm-hmm. You know, Dallas Jenkins, who the creator of The Chosen, I was like, so what, you know, what, how, why is this different? And he's like, well, most movies about Jesus focus only on him being the Son of God, and they don't want to be irreverent to that. So you have this mystic figure who doesn't seem
very
normal
human
being. He said, but you know, we're doing a TV series here, and there's a lot in the Bible about him being the Son of Man. And by his own, that's why I read those. It's like half of those were powerful. The other half was like, he had a bad reputation. He came eating and drinking. He was
no
homeless.
Place to stay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, so he's like, we just have more time to represent him as a human. Because he did it. It wasn't like he created. Yeah. When I said he created the chosen, I mean, he really didn't. He just took what he read in the Bible and said, oh, he was a human.
But his concept was brilliant, because it was like, who would see that more than the chosen people around him that lived with him day in, day out? That's where they would see Jesus' humanity more than anybody else.
But he made the point that he actually has more time to develop that without, to Zach's point, without making him look almost just like not godly, because that would be out. I mean, because we know Jesus, in him there was no sin. So whatever reputation reference he's talking about in Matthew 11, it was purely from trying to show them that what their idea of law keeping was not right.
I wanted to mention something. You mentioned about acknowledging before Jesus, something I just saw last night, and it made me think about it. And I had never been aware of this man before. There's a brother in Christ named Jonathan Isaac that plays for the Orlando Magic. And he first came on my radar screen because back when the NBA season started, he wouldn't kneel for the anthem, and everybody was kneeling, you know. And so that got my attention. I thought, well, this old guy, you know, he said, why? He said, I think that's disrespectful. I'm not going to do it. Well, I mean, I thought, man, that guy's courageous. So I kind of started looking for him. Well, last night he was on Shannon Bream's show. Let's take a break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0? My annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee. Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit FearlessArmyRollCall.com to secure your spot.
And of course, now there's a lot of debate going on in the NBA players about whether to take the vaccine. They're trying to make them take it. They don't want to take it. So she had him on to talk about that. And they did for the first half of the segment. But the second half of the segment, you know, he just said, let me just tell you why, whether it's the virus, the vaccine, all this. And then he went into just a 2 minute, you know, you don't have much time on those shows, but a 2 minute gospel presentation of why he believes what he believes, and he doesn't fear anything because he's a follower of Jesus Christ. And I was just like sitting there watching, I thought, man, not only is he doing this in a public setting, but he's doing it out of a group of people that you wouldn't expect that from, you know, these pro athletes. So, Jace, to me, I thought about this context because I thought, here's a man who's not afraid to acknowledge Jesus before men, and he won't be popular because of it. I mean, most of the people will follow the
he's
NBA.
He's got, since we have the fear of God, we try to persuade men.
That's right. That's right. But I was inspired. You know, yeah. I was watching and thinking, this young guy, he's in his 20s, but he's just like, I'm full board in no matter what anybody else thinks about it. So I thought that was pretty good.
Well, also, you know, when we get to this statement he made in Matthew 11, this is not talked about very, very often. When he got to verse 20, when he said, Jesus began to denounce the cities in which most of his miracles had been performed because they didn't repent, which is a concept that I think we should acknowledge from time to time. And the whole point
And it's a tone change, Jace, because up until this point, he's mostly just, I mean, he's said some harsh things, especially the leaders, the, you know, Pharisees, but this is a tone change for Jesus about the kingdom. I feel like, I mean, when he goes in here, this is what I call hard preaching.
Yeah, but I was just going to make the point that a lot of people say, well, if I just could see a miracle or if God would whisper to me, then I would change. And not necessarily. I mean, they got the miracles and they just dismissed them because at the heart of the matter is they didn't want to change their life.
Right.
And when God is real and Jesus is who he claimed to be, well, changes start happening in your life. It goes hand in hand. If you actually think that God has all these qualities of being everywhere and all powerful and all knowing and full of grace and truth and there's nowhere you can hide and all this kind of stuff, well, you would actually start making changes in your life because you're like, oh, he's fully aware. And so this is where I get that illustration about Jesus knowing what would happen if something that didn't happened. Because the way he phrases this, he says, woe to you, Chorazin. So this is this city. Woe to you, Bethsaida. If the miracles that were performed in you had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. Well, it just seems like a boring verse until you think about it in that light. Well, how did he know what would happen on something that didn't happen, if it would have happened? It didn't happen, but if it did, he's like, well, that you would have repented. I mean, it just seems like a small thing, but if you really think about it, when you think about what God knows in big picture wise, and he's going from city to city, oh, he knows what you're up to.
Oh, yeah.
He has that capacity. Yeah,
you know, I think it's interesting to us. We've talked about this a lot, Jace. Me and you hit on this all the time. I think the reason why these people, if you're just coming for the miracle, then you're probably not going to come. You're not going to come. If you're coming for the miracles point to Jesus. And I think what these people were doing here, and even when later when he talks about to blaspheme the Holy Spirit, you know, Jesus is performing these miracles in front of these people, and they're so prideful and arrogant that even in the midst of the miraculous, what do they say? Oh, well, that he must have got those powers from the devil. And that, and then that's when he says, you know, to blaspheme the Spirit, you can't be forgiven. It's not that it's like this sin that's like, oh, if I do that, then I'm out. At one time, what it is, it's a spirit of pride and arrogance and a total rejection of truth in the face of the most obvious revelation that's pointing to Jesus. I think these people were prideful because when he gets to verse 25, he kind of mocks them when he says, at that time, Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and intelligent and have revealed them to infants. Hmm. That's an incredible verse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's basically chastising these intellectuals, and he's basically saying, it's to borrow from the book, it's for the C-plus people. It's for the infants. It's for the babies. It's for the masses. you know?
Well, I keep going back to that, the Sermon on the Mount where he started, when he's talking about, blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Well, this flies in the face of these great feelings and people coming to the Lord to receive the salve or the temporary relief or the joy of like having a great worship service, or, you know, you're waving your hands or maybe experiencing the presence of God in that moment. And then 4 hours later, you know, you're commode hugging drunk on a golf course or whatever, you know, and because we see that,
yeah.
And people say, well, how does that happen? Well, there's a difference in, you know, when you start talking about repentance, there's a difference in coming to God to be wowed or to get some salve and living an everyday life where you're acknowledging Jesus, where all these negative things, you know, who likes to be persecuted or have or insults or, I mean, he started off saying that. He was painting a picture of, this is going to be rough.
Plus, the Apostle Paul alludes to this when he wrote his letter to the Corinthians. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it's the power of God. It's written, I'll destroy the wisdom of the wise, going to your text you quoted there, Zach, a while ago, the wise and the learned, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher? And when Matthew's recording all this, they were right in Jesus' face. Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand miraculous signs, and if you look at it, what did they get? Did they ever get enough of them? They were saying, okay, it's by the devil he's doing. They were blaming him one miracle after the other. They demand miraculous signs, and these Greeks, they look for wisdom, which is exactly the way it is now here today. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews, foolishness to Gentiles, but to those whom God has called, Jew or Greek, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. He went on to say, think of what y'all were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. The very wise people, even leading up to 2,021 years since Jesus showed up, the message of the wise, it's all a big joke, Zach. They laugh.
Yeah.
They say it's for the ignorant, the unstable. We don't need that. We're too smart for that. It still goes on to this day. Nothing has changed.
Well, I think that's why when you back up and look at the whole chapter 11, you kind of had three instances where people had missed the real Jesus. And one of them happened to be John the Baptist, and it really wasn't his fault.
Right.
You know, he was like, should there be somebody else? You know, is there somebody else coming?
Did I miss this?
Well, then you had this. He gets into the culture and the generation. They're saying, we sang a song and you didn't dance. And then he refers to himself as, you're just not the picture of who you thought I should be, my humanity and how I operate. Well, then he gets to these cities. Well, they had a different view in the miracles. They were chasing the miracles, but no repentance. And so it's like, it's almost the whole chapter is about, how do you be that close to Jesus and miss it?
Yeah.
And so then when he gets to the end, I think Zach brought this up, talking about all of a sudden, he gets into having the Father in verse 25, and it says, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this was your good pleasure. All of a sudden, he gets into this family idea, which when you think about why Jesus came and why God created us and this idea of being part of a forever family that God wanted to dwell with people, going back to the Adam and Eve in the garden and what it took to get us here through Jesus. I think that's was his point. Is like you have me down in a ritualistic view of what you think religion should be. And now all of a sudden he starts talking about fathers and children and family and being real. And then he closes it with a famous verse that doesn't seem to fit with the rest of the chapter. But he says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Which I've always viewed it as, he's like, you're trying way too hard on your own to find meaning, purpose, and accomplishment. And if you would just surrender to me, I'll supply the power.
Which we're at it.
Well, I think that's the I think it does fit though. If you because what he, in verse 25, what he's saying is, I'm revealing myself to the most vulnerable people among you.
Yeah,
it's the infants. I mean, that's when he says infant, he's talking about vulnerability, completely helpless. And then he says in verse 27, 26 says, this was the way that God planned it. It was for this way was well-pleasing in your sight, talking about the Father. All things have been handed over to me by my Father, going back to Daniel 7, when the Ancient of Days handed him the kingdom and handed him all things in dominion. And no one knows the Son except the Father, nor does anyone know the Father except the Son. And I love this part. And anyone to whom the Son wills to reveal him. So the question is, well, who does the Son will to reveal the Father to? Well, he already told us in verse 25, the infants. It's the lowly people. That's why when you hit 28, he's basically saying, this is for the weary. This is for the heavy laden. If you got it together and you got it figured out, this ain't for you. Don't come.
Yeah.
You don't need me. You've got it figured out. But if you're heavy, and there's people listening to this podcast right now, they're like, man, that's me. I'm weary and I'm heavy laden. The good news for you is that you're the one that Jesus is revealing himself to. Yeah. It's those who are humble in spirit say, I need help.
Good point.
Perfect ending. All right. We'll pick it up next time in chapter 12.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.